Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Mennel, I am John Schmelk, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat if you want to get in touch with us that way, right here on Giants.com, the Giants mobile app, and on Twitter, where we'll be with you for the first few minutes of the show. All right, Lance, not a whole lot going on the last couple of days in the NFL. It's been quiet as teams begin to gear up for the NFL Combine. There's been some whispers about Tony Romo being cut. Perhaps the Cowboys renegotiating his contract to make it maybe a little bit easier to move him. But really no news, not a lot of movement going on in the league. And I feel like this is kind of the quiet time. And everyone has probably done what they're going to do until you get to the Combine. You start talking to other executives. And then who knows what the next step teams are going to take.
Yeah, I think talks are going to heat up next week once all the executives are in the same room, whether it be trade talks, free agency talks, and so forth. And you'll also start to hear, I think, more stories for teams that are trying to re-sign their own players. Because remember, you can lock up a guy who wore your uniform before he hits the free agent market in the days leading up to the start of the new league year, which is March 9th. So next week, you're probably going to hear a lot more news, whether it be free agency related to the Combine and so forth. I mean, the other interesting story that came out is earlier this week, we heard Jay Cutler is on the move potentially. They're shopping around. Now there's talk about maybe he's contemplating retirement. And
well, I didn't hear that, retirement?
The Redskins and everything else. That's a new story, yeah.
Really?
Yep. And then
Kirk Cousins. What, is he 32?
He's probably in that ballpark, I would say. Not
that's,
that old.
Yeah. Wow.
Plus, you know, he's been injury prone over the course of his
career. I mean, he might just be tired about people making fun of him for 12 years. So maybe he just wants to get out. He's made plenty of money.
Yeah. I think it depends on if a team could present itself that would allow him to come in and he thinks he can still be competitive and win football games. That's the key. I mean, if you look at the Jets have two of his former teammates right now, Brandon Marshall and Matt Forte. Would they be willing to reunite the former Chicago Bears in gangrene? You know, it's possible they may look at that if they think that they could be competitive, depending on some of the other moves they make to bolster their offensive line and their defense. But he's going to be a name that could very well impact the quarterback market as well as Kirk Cousins, because the Redskins need to determine what they want to do, and there's talk about San Francisco could be interested in pulling off a trade for him.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I don't think the Redskins want to trade him. I don't think they want to lose Kirk Cousins. I think
they wouldn't want to lose him.
Believe that he is their quarterback of the present and future, and why wouldn't you, based on the last two seasons he's had? Is he Aaron Rodgers? You know, probably not. Is he Tom Brady? No. Is he Drew Brees? No. But he's right with that next group of players. I mean, his numbers have been spectacular. Nearly 70% completion percentage over the last couple of years. So, I mean, he's just been really, really good. So, to me, there's no need for them to move on from him, and this is just the Redskins' way to negotiate, where you're trying to get him under as good of a deal as possible. And, you know, for 1 year, if you want to franchise him again and just protect yourself from a potential injury, great. But for all the time it has taken for the Washington Redskins to find the quarterback after Mark Rippon led them to a Super Bowl, do you want to go through the names? I mean, Heath Shuler, Jason Campbell,
Rex Grossman,
Gus Frerotte, trying to think of some other guys that were there. Donovan McNabb at the end of his career when he was washed up. I mean, the names are not good. They're not good. Oh. Why would they want to move on from Kirk Cousins? I mean, geez, come on.
Plus, he's young. He has upside. It's not as if he's aging. He's been productive. You threw out some of his numbers. He's put the team in a position to compete for a playoff spot in each of the last 2 years. And the Redskins, let's face it, they're not in a position where they have much leverage. It's not as if they have another quarterback on the roster and they go to Kirk. Kirk, listen, we're more than willing to let this guy take over for you. So take this type of a contract right now. Who do they have? They have nobody.
In fact, Kirk was the other guy.
Correct. He was the one backing up RG3. Now they got rid of RG3, so Kirk is the only guy. They really don't have much leverage of anything. I think it's Kirk Cousins and his agent who right now could say, listen, San Francisco's willing to give you this. If you don't want to pay us a long-term deal, they are. Let's work out a contract right now.
Finally, what do you think will eventually happen with Romo? Will they figure out a way to deal him, or is he going to end up being cut and becoming a free agent before free agency starts?
I think they're going to do everything in their power to probably move him, and they'll take whatever they can get. I mean, if you're Dallas,
but will a team be able to fit him under their salary cap with the way his salary is set up?
I think it depends on how desperate a team is. For example, if you look at the Houston Texans, they have a lot of money that they need to pay Brock Osweiler, but if you're Houston, maybe you say, you know what, we'll suck it up for a year, because maybe Romo's a one-year rental with that defense, will be competitive, it's a wide-open division, will be willing to make that sacrifice financially, and then we could always move on from Romo depending on how you factor in the contract and how you structure that. I mean, listen, if I'm the Cowboys, I'm still heavily considering keeping Tony Romo because Dak Prescott does not cost a lot of money, and he's not a major cap hit because he's on a rookie contract. And they were planning on going into it. If Romo was healthy, Romo would have had his cap hit, and Prescott would have been his backup. And you don't know necessarily what Prescott's going to be moving forward because you've only seen him in one season. I think insurance is important still if you're the Cowboys.
To me, I don't think you could hold on to him. A, you're going to get questions all year next year again about the Romo Prescott
thing. They had that this year.
And number two, and I think this is more important, I think you want to get a salary off the books. So I think you take the hit this year. They even save $5 million if they release him this year and make him a pre-June 1st cut. And then you have $20 million off your books for next year that you can start using to, you know, either re-sign your young players or bring in some help on defense or whatever. I think that money is much better used to sign other players that are going to help you rather than a backup quarterback that might never play a minute of football because you have Dak Prescott.
Well, it's certainly making your money more valuable and getting better return. There's no doubt about that. It's just that in this day and age, you lose your quarterback or a guy doesn't live up to the expectations that he had the previous season, it's a very risky situation.
And number two, I think they want to do Romo a favor. I think they want to give him
a chance to start somewhere else, based on his relationship with the team.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. However, I think when you're running a team, though, you know, you can't necessarily think about the emotions and the feelings. You have to do what's good for the well-being of your team. I say that goes for any team, not necessarily just the Cowboys in particular. And I get all of the arguments that you could use the money and the resources elsewhere, but, you know, part of what Dallas has been doing over the last few years is they've been focusing on the draft to rebuild their team with the offensive line, the defense. So I don't
think they re-signed Zach Martin, though.
Well, that's the argument. The argument is the Romo money you can use to re-up your own guys.
Right.
But a lot of people are arguing the money you take away from locking up Romo, you can then go out and spend it in free agency, and that hasn't worked for the Cowboys in the past.
No, and they really haven't done it much the last
few
years either.
So the whole point is you can still have about just $10 million of cap space and rework your defense in the draft, which they've been doing, as opposed to necessarily going out on a spending spree.
Though three of their four starting defensive backs are free agents, so they need to figure out something with that because they're going to have to make some.
Of course. Well, and they may not really want to bring all of those guys back. I mean, Brandon Carr didn't necessarily give him a big return and so forth. So, you know, they have to consider that as well.
All right, everybody, if you're watching on Twitter, thanks for joining us. We'll switch gears, do some heavy Giants stuff, then we'll take your calls at 201-939-4513 on Giants.com or on the Giants mobile app. Now, Lance, it was an interesting article that came out on Pro Football Focus today, and it was kind of their evaluation of their free agency this year. They called it the free agency preview. They estimate just over $30 million of cap space. Again, all those numbers are unofficial. We have no idea what the actual number is. The Giants do. They list their biggest needs as defensive end, including the fact that JPP is a free agent, so he's in the mix there. Offensive tackle, and then they throw wide receiver and linebacker as the third and fourth positions where they need the most help. Do you agree with those four biggest needs position-wise, or is there another position you would throw into the mix there that they think they need to worry about? I think you would have to include tight end in that group, which
yeah,
is not
tight end. I mean, and probably running back would be probably the last one on the list that I would add on if you feel you want to add some depth given the fact that you lost Rashad Jennings. It's interesting that they put linebacker there, and that's a position we haven't really talked about much on this program because everybody tends to forget Keenan Robinson is a free agent. And Keenan Robinson
and Kelvin Shepard, by the way,
was a nice signing. And Shepard also provided some depth on the back end. So, you know, those two guys, let's face it, they've increased their stocks based on what they were able to showcase this year.
Well, I mean, Shepard and Robinson basically split middle linebacker duties. It was Shepard first down or second down, and then Robinson in passing situation. So they basically split middle linebacker duties.
But I think Robinson helped his cause even more because, remember, the MO with respect to Robinson was that he couldn't stay healthy through his days with the Washington Redskins. He played a full season and proved his durability. So I think that is something that probably other teams are going to take notice of. But, you know, those are two key integral pieces of the defense that are not household names. You know, we don't talk about them like they're Snacks and Janoris Jenkins and Landon Collins. But, you know, they certainly made significant strides in their playing careers and made an impact on this defense. And, you know, if you were to lose one of them, I think all of a sudden that does present perhaps a needed linebacker for the Giants.
Yeah, they also have B.J. Goodson, obviously, who could be a linebacker on first or second down. But then you're worrying about your nickel linebacker again. And I thought Keenan Robinson and Casillas ended up being a pretty good combination in those third down packages where you had two linebackers on the field that had to cover. And you're right, they would have to figure out what to do with that second nickel linebacker spot. Maybe something in the draft, maybe a free agent, who knows. But you're right, I think that is interesting because we really haven't gotten many calls or talked much about the tight end position over the course of the offseason. A couple other notes from the story. They have their must re-sign section. They have JPP in there, considering how well he played along with Olivier Vernon. I don't think any Giant fans would argue with the fact they want to have JPP back.
Not a surprise.
Of course, it depends on the cost, and they make the point if JPP doesn't return because of a big offer elsewhere, they suggest Jabal Sheard as a good replacement, someone you probably don't have to pay a ton of money to. I think his last contract with the Patriots is something like 2 years, $10 million or something in that area. He was a rotational player there. You know, he's not going to play the 90% of the snaps that JPP played. But if you can play him with a combination of Oa or Romeo Aguara,
split it up,
and move in them there as a pass rusher on second and third down, play him 50 snaps a game instead of 70, I think that is actually something that makes sense if you can't bring somebody, if you can't bring JPP back.
Well, and Spags has been known to rotate personnel. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a major adjustment that he would have to make. And remember, Spags was asked as the season progressed about the high snap count for both Olivier Vernon and JPP, and he said throughout the season, listen, we'd like to try to see if we could bring their numbers down. And we were talking about this in the second half of the season, and sometimes it's just how game flows, injuries, obviously with JPP brought his numbers down, and that increased opportunities for some of the other players. But that may not necessarily be a terrible thing, even if JPP returns, to try to get more reps for some of the younger guys, because I don't think you want to play Vernon and JPP back-to-back seasons where, you know, they led the NFL for all defensive linemen, not just necessarily defensive ends.
They have listed as the Giants' dream splash, which means splash free agent signing, Andre Whitworth, someone we've talked a lot about, the
Bengals.
Free agent left tackle from the Bengals, who's obviously still a very good pass protector. But again, Lance, we've heard him say a couple different things. One, he says he wants to win, but he's been in Cincinnati for so long. That's a guy, and I said this to Paul last week, I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of these veterans that actually does get signed before free agency starts. I wouldn't be surprised if he decides, you know, I want to stay at home and I want to stay. If he doesn't, great, he becomes a target. But I would not be surprised if he decided, you know what, I've made a lot of money, I'll make a little bit more, let's figure out a good, fair deal here with the Bengals, and the Bengals decide to bring him back, even though he's 35.
Yeah, I think it's a game of leverage right now between both parties. He's done a number of interviews. He actually recently did one on SiriusXM NFL Radio where he said he does want to win, as you noted, but at the same time, he also would like to see if he can work things out to stay in Cincinnati because he's been there for his entire career, and he's really never been a free agent because they've been giving him extensions along the way, essentially.
And frankly, who says he can't win in Cincinnati? You know, somebody called up last week, and they said, well, look at the Giants' record and the Bengals' record. He's a much better chance of winning here. I said, yeah, last year. You want to look at the 4 years before that, the Bengals won 10 games every one of those years, won the division, and were in the playoffs regularly. So no guarantee that he's going to lose if he stays in Cincinnati. So that's something to take a look at. The Bengals obviously had a down year this year, coming off four.
And they had a lot of injuries,
four
too.
Four or five straight playoff appearances with the Bengals, something like that. They had made the playoffs a bunch of years in a row.
Well, they hadn't missed the playoffs since Dalton was drafted. So, I mean, we could look up.
Oh, wow, really? It was that long,
since Andy Dalton has been drafted, they had not missed the playoffs. This was their first year. So it's been quite a run, and part of it is because, you know, they've invested in a number of young guys at all types of positions. So Andy Dalton was drafted in 2011.
It's 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, five straight seasons. It's pretty damn good. Two other free agent prospects that Pro Football Focus mentions in their story is a wide receiver, and I think this actually does make sense given what they need, Pierre Garçon, who's a guy who's a veteran. He's reliable. He's a possession receiver. He's not a burner. Bigger guy, he's not 6'3", but he's a guy that can go over the middle, catch the ball, take the hit, and hold on to the football.
Yeah, I just wonder, Shepard is a guy that they envision playing in the slot.
Garçon could play it outside.
To me, I think at this stage in his career, Garçon is a guy that, you know, I think you'd use to me in the inside to be that possession receiver,
though,
pick up some of the short yardage.
He did play outside with Washington. They Crowder inside.
He did, but
the
they
time.
Also... You know what, with Doxson also.
They move people around.
They moved a lot of guys around, plus Jordan Reed is lined up as an outside guy. They had a lot of versatility. Now, maybe given the Giants don't have the same amount of versatility in terms of the receiving corps and the tight ends, you know, they can envision a different type of role. I like Garçon. I've been a fan of him ever since he's been in the league. I'm just wondering if you look at necessity for wide receiver to complement the likes of Shepard and Beckham, are you looking for maybe more of a vertical threat type of guy as opposed to somebody who's like Pierre Garçon?
Yeah, more of a Kenny Britt formula, who plays outside, gets down the field. I get that, no question. The third target they had, and this goes back to linebackers, what we mentioned earlier, Zach Brown, a young linebacker out of Buffalo, who they say is very good in coverage against tight ends and running backs. And we talk about if you lose Keenan Robinson, you need to replace that nickel position, and that's one of the guys that at least Pro Football Focus thinks would be a good fit in that situation.
Oh, I think that's a nice rundown in terms of the needs and perhaps projected free agents that the Giants want to look at. But, I mean, we've been focusing on a lot of those positions that you listed. I just think linebacker is an interesting one. It has not received a lot of attention. And, you know, I think it says a lot about where the Giants went from in 2015 to 2016 at that position. They were healthier at that position this past season, and I think that they showcased more versatility and depth at that position. Now, part of that was the free agents they brought in. You know, let's not also forget about, I thought the step that Devon Kennard made from 15 to 16 should not be overlooked.
He stayed healthy, first and foremost.
He stayed healthy. Well, that's part of taking the next step, showing that you're durable, and also showing that they could play him like he was utilized in college at USC when he moved back down to the defensive line, and he seemed to be in a comfort zone. Because, you know, a lot of people tend to forget this. Devon Kennard worked with a number of different defensive coordinators and a number of different schemes.
I think a different one
every year.
Yeah,
I was
correct.
Say, if memory serves me correct, I think that's exactly how it played out.
Yeah, because that was the period of time where they were jumping from Kiffin, Carroll, and they had all the different coaches in there year after year.
Yeah. So now you come to the Giants. Remember, you make the transition when you're even with the Giants to a new defensive scheme, too.
Yeah.
So this was now the first time in his career, back-to-back years, he had the same defensive coordinator, and he was durable. It's no coincidence that those two factors played a role in him taking a significant step this season.
Here's the thing with Devon Kennard, and I think this simplifies the type of player he is kind of nicely. You do not want to see Devon Kennard in coverage. He's not a coverage linebacker. You don't want him chasing running backs. You don't want him chasing tight ends, and that's fine. Let him stop the run on first and second down. As you mentioned, now the Giants are moving him to put his hand in the dirt on third down to rush the quarterback. I think those are his best positions to get the most out of him, and I think the Giants have figured that out, and that's why I think he was effective the way he was last year.
I agree with you 100%, but I also think that a part of that, John, is when you have different defensive coordinators and coaches, they're trying to get to know the player. And remember, he missed all that time. When you miss the time, you're not in practice, so they can't notice what you do well as a player. He was in practice every week, so therefore Spags and the coaching staff realized, okay, when we use him at the line, he's a lot more effective.
201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll try to get some tweets in along the way. And if you want to give us a call about the NBA trade deadline, we can do that too.
Yes, absolutely. We cover it all here.
Yes, we do. As Lance's basketball team attempts to clean house after an off-season of missteps.
Clean house as if your team all of a sudden is sitting back and enjoying the championship parade.
No, actually, Dan Salmon is producing today. She sent a great video. From, you know, all the rumors, and I said, the NBA trade deadline, it feels like when you're on the roller coaster and you're kind of getting pulled to the top of the hill,
yes.
And then, like, a bunch of crazy stuff happens, and he sent out the video, the Final Destination 3, when basically...
Yes, that's a good one.
Basically, everybody dies.
Well, I don't
and,
know if we'll
and the point
that,
was,
yeah.
That's what Knick fans are used to.
There you go.
which is not untrue.
I don't need to add anything to that statement. I think that was perfect.
All right, let's go to Oliver in Denver. He will lead us off. Oliver, how are you, pal?
Oh, awesome, man. Good to speak to you guys. How are you guys doing today?
We're great, Oliver. How are you?
Pretty good. I love the off season, but this off season, like the start of last off season, I'm kind of nervous. I want to ask you guys' opinion on JPP. Where do you guys think we get off the pitch offers as far as where do we cap out? As far as him offering him an annual salary.
I mean,
honestly,
I don't think, Oliver, it makes sense for us to throw out dollar figures per year because it all depends on how the contract's structured, guaranteed money, and things like that. But you're going to do me a favor, look online, look at the upper echelon of defensive end contracts in the NFL right now. That's where he's going to want to land. And the Giants will determine whether or not they think they're going to be able to reach into that tier.
Well, and Vernon's contract is up there. So, I mean, you don't really have to look too
far. At the top.
Yeah. I mean, you have a teammate that pretty much set the barometer for the market at that position, Oliver. I mean, that's the guy that I think you could look at numbers-wise. But the question is, can the Giants afford to keep two guys at a similar rate and also try to bring back a guy like Hankins and have all of those resources dedicated to one facet of your team? That's going to be at least something they're going to have to at least contemplate.
And, Oliver, it's demand, too. I mean, the Giants are only going to have to offer more than what other people are offering. You know, it's... The old joke, you don't have to be faster than the bear, you only have to be faster than your friend. Because then the bear catches your friend and you get away.
And that's you looking out for your friend, clearly. Yeah.
He's gone if he hits the open market. If we don't franchise him or agree with the contract before the start of free agency, you got Coughlin just waiting, just prying on them in Jacksonville. They got over, like, I think close to 100 million in cap space.
Well, Oliver,
Dallas.
I have a question for you, real quick. If you're Jason Pierre-Paul, I want you to put yourself in his shoes for a second. Why would you sign a contract before you hit free agency? Why?
Because I want to be a New York Giant.
But you can be a New York Giant after free agency, and you get all your offers too. So why not just wait?
I agree with you. And if he's after the biggest payday, and he's going to wait and see what the biggest offers are. I don't think the Giants can compete. Even teams like Dallas is clearing space.
Oh, they don't have any.
Probably have. Well, if they get rid of Romo, they have a shot. They just cleared $17 million with their offensive lineman restructure.
Yeah, but that's because they were $15 million over the cap.
Yeah, they're about
$3 million under. So I don't think Dallas is a real threat for JPP. I think the first team you mentioned is a good one.
I hope not.
In Jacksonville.
I hope not. Yeah, and Tampa Bay is another team. It's a lot of teams with cap space that will have more cap space than Giants.
And you're right.
Which is why I want to – if we don't agree with – if Jerry Reese doesn't get him under contract before the start of free agency, I'm all for signing him to a franchise tag. I know he doesn't want to play on a one-year deal. I know that he's going to eat up about close to $17 million in cap space. But if he hits the open market, we're 11-5 because we had two dynamic pass rushers, a great defense. If we just go into the draft and pick some of our holes and bring back JPP, I think we're back on the right track.
Well,
again.
Oliver, I want to throw out two things to you real quick. If you do the franchise tag and it's that high, first of all, you can kiss goodbye to Jonathan Hankins because there's no way you're going to be able to do a 1 year on 17 with JPP and then pay Hankins a lot of money on top of that. Look, I guess it is theoretically possible, but if you do that, then you have no money left and you're done, period. Stop. You can't sign anybody else. So I think that's very unlikely. 17 for 1 year is a huge cap hit. It'll be one of the biggest individual non-quarterback cap hits in the entire NFL. And the second point I want to throw at you, and I've posed this question to Dottino and other people, in the final four or five games last year, starting with that Cowboys game, did you see a huge drop-off from the defense when Jason Pierre-Paul was not on the field?
Yes.
They gave up 7 points to the Dallas Cowboys.
One Zeke ate up for 100 yards. That was out JPP.
They scored seven points.
I still have nightmares about Aaron Rodgers running around before halftime and launching and killing his dagging us for a touchdown.
Well, but Oliver, he's done that to everybody.
JPP wouldn't have won the game. But
I hate to tell you.
He would have got to Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers did that to you on October 9th when both JPP and Olivier Vernon were on the field, too. He was sitting back there drinking coffee that game, too. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it doesn't matter who you have on defense. He does it to everybody. So I really don't think that anybody is, in particular, one individual is going to slow down Aaron Rodgers, whether you have them on the field.
And again, we're not advocating letting him go or re-signing him. We're just pointing out both sides of the argument, which is why I think what you said at the beginning, Oliver, and I think it's different than last year, this free agent period, I think, is stressful for Giant fans. I think last year was fun. You know, you got all this money, you're throwing it around, you're bringing guys in left and right. It's fun. This, you're worried about retaining your guys. You know, you have more limited resources than you had last year. I think this period will be more stressful than last year, which is probably more fun. You know what I mean?
All right. I got one more question. So I agree with you, and I'm, like, nervous. But the main reason I'm nervous is because I saw our success last year on defense.
Mm-hmm.
I look at OV, and I look at JPP. OV, if you look at OV's contract, I think he got paid close to $17 million last year. And if you had to ask me before JPP got hurt, our best defensive lineman – I know Snacks is great on against the run, but you could arguably say it was JPP. He was leading the team in sacks. He was dominant. So I think he truly outplayed that $10 million contract. I wish we had given him two or 3 years on top of that, but he's worth $17 million. So if I could bring back that guy with our defensive line, even if we do lose Hankins, I don't want to lose Hankins, but with OV, JPP, and Snacks, we can plug in Bromley or we could plug in Robert Thomas or picking a draft pick, and we'll still be that dominant defense. I don't think we can lose them. I don't think we can afford to. I love what the depth we have with Okra and Okra. Double O coming back. Hopefully he's able to stay healthy and take the next step in his game, but we got to bring him back.
All right. Thanks, Oliver.
Thank you, guys. Hopefully we bring back JPP. Go Giants.
We'll see.
Right,
well,
appreciate the phone call.
Still got a couple weeks to figure that out. I remember this, too, and I didn't bring this up before, and I know me and Lance make this point all the time, and I'll make it quick. I'll get Lance's take on it. I know fans want JPP to get locked up before the trade deadline, before the free agency period starts.
The NBA's still on your mind.
Sorry. That's not Jerry Reese's decision.
Yeah,
he could offer him a bajillion contracts, and JPP could say no. So remember, this is a deal where both sides have to be on the same page. So the Giants could want to do something. Unless the player also wants to do it, it's not going to matter.
Well, and sometimes the player and the agent wants to see what the market is like so that they can maybe come back to the team and say, hey, you know, based on what we've talked with other team executives, this is what we think we could get for JPP. What do you guys think you could do in close proximity to it? I mean, just because he hits the open market, and this goes back to the point that we were discussing earlier, doesn't mean that JPP wouldn't then come back to the Giants.
Of course.
And perhaps entertain them either matching it or coming close. So I don't think, you know, it's the worst case scenario if he gets to hit the market. It just may obviously bring some different numbers to the table, and then the Giants may have to react to that. But we've seen players, they go to the market, and then they come back to their team, and then they stay. I mean, I don't think that that's unusual. But if you're the player and you're the agent, I think you can understand from their lens, from their perspective, that sometimes you want to see what the market can do for you as opposed to just looking at it through the lens of your own team trying to re-sign you.
And remember, this is the only time in Jason Pierre-Paul's career that he's going to have the opportunity to become a free agent and field offers from other teams. And it's something that these athletes cherish and they wait for from the time they get drafted. It's hard to say no to that.
Because limited opportunities. I mean, it's the same thing with a guy like Andrew Whitworth, who we were talking about earlier. It's the first time, and the guy's 35 years old.
Which was by his choice now.
He signed some extensions. Right. But, you know, he also is entering uncharted territory. Do I want to now test the market for the first time in my career, or am I comfortable in Cincinnati, and I will see whatever they can offer me so that I can finish out my career there?
And I also think, and I'll disagree with a word that Oliver used, I think dominant is a little strong. I mean, if you go back, going into the Cincinnati game, I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul had, what, like 1.5 sacks?
Good look at the game log.
I mean, to use the word dominant, I think is a little bit strong. Now, he's a very good two-way player. He's excellent against the run. He's a good pass rusher. Look, no one's debating that he's a very good football player. I think dominant is probably a little bit strong. Well, Snacks Harrison, dominant against the run. I think dominant for Jason, probably a little bit strong heading into that bye week, the first 7 or so weeks of the year. What do you have?
In the first 9 games of the season, 1.5 sacks.
That.
So.
201-939-4513. Let's go to line 3. Jack is in New York. He's up next. Hi, Jack.
Hi, how are you?
What's up, buddy?
Listen, I had another thread that I look at sometimes, and a few weeks ago they were discussing the severity of Darian Thompson's foot injury.
Okay.
And I hadn't heard much about this, but they seemed to be, you know, a little concerned. I'm not sure where they got the information. And they
Where was this, Jack? Where'd you see it?
It's on another website. You know, a thread that they have on another Giants website.
Oh, okay.
And they used possibly the dreaded Liz Frank comment, and I just didn't know if you guys had heard anything about his availability to be 100% when this year starts.
My understanding, and the Giants were asked this question directly after the injury, whether or not it was a Liz Frank injury, and they said no. That's the last I know about it. So if it is, that's news to me. My understanding is that it was just a severely sprained foot. Now, foot injuries for athletes are always things you worry about. They tend to recur. They're hard to recover from. You're on your feet all the time. It's just the nature of the beast. But Jack, Lance and I have not gotten any indication that his rehab was not on schedule. And frankly, I don't know any different. I don't know any better. Maybe I'm going to be wrong. But I would be surprised if you don't see him on the field in one way, shape, or form, whether it's doing team drills or doing whatever, when the team reports for workouts in April.
And he was also shut down, remember. He initially came back. He started practicing. There was a re-aggravation of the injury, and then he was shut down for
the
remainder
of the
season.
That was in October, right?
Yeah, I want to say that that was probably in late October, early November, maybe the latest off the top of my head. And then they shut him down. So it's not like he was doing any football activities or anything to put himself in a position to further aggravate the injury once that occurred in practice.
He was put on injured reserve on November 9th.
Okay.
Good call. So he came back late October, and then he was placed on injured reserve on November 9th. He started practicing that first couple days of the month
and
in
that's
November.
When he re-aggravated the injury. Correct. But then once he re-aggravated it, they shut him down.
Yeah, he was in a boot.
He was put on injured reserve. So we're talking about from November 9th, and now it's February 23rd.
So you're in 3 full months.
I mean, even if there is a report out there, I don't know what the source of that report is.
No, he's
to
not
even
here.
Indicate. Yeah, so, I mean, unless it's somebody who's working out with him closely outside of the facility. But as far as stuff from inside the facility, November 9th to the end of the season, he was shut down. He was on injured reserve.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make a comment, too, because I'm thinking of good old Paul Dantino there that likes to say that it's the trenches, stupid. But I'm hoping that there are some people with megaphones in the offices, one on each side of Jerry Reese, to say, you know, this year things like tight ends and possibly linebackers, you know, are coming to the fore. I know he's kind of against those kind of things, but we've been killed by tight ends over the years in the NFC East. And it's, you know, I think it's time for us to kind of find one of these guys that can, you know, fight back and give us some advantages on the offense, because we certainly need to improve it.
Well, I think you're referring to both sides, though, right? Because you're saying that tight ends have hurt the defense.
Absolutely. The NFC tight ends, I think Jason Witten's going to go into a Hall of Fame on the Giants' back.
Well, more than that. I mean, Jason Witten's done well against
He's
everybody.
He's had a field day against everybody. But, yes, your point is well taken. He has had a nice success rate against the Giants, but I would say that there has been a number of tight ends that have had a success rate against the Giants' defense. It has been an issue over the last few seasons. But
better last year, a little bit.
It did improve, but still, at times, though, you did see that teams targeted the middle of the field
and
took advantage
of
the tight end.
Well, when you have really good cover corners like the Giants do, teams are going to look elsewhere.
No doubt about that, which means is I think the point that, you know, obviously the phone caller is mentioning is that's why you need to lean on your safeties and your linebackers to pick up the slack when your corners, like you said, are focusing on the wide receivers. I will say this, though. You know, you could go out and get yourself a versatile linebacker, and Keenan Robinson fits that bill. I mean, Robinson can go in coverage, and he can stop the run, but there are very few linebackers in my mind. Honestly, if you asked me who do I think does most effective at the linebacker position against tight ends, there's one guy that comes to mind.
Luke Kuechly.
And he missed half the season because he was concussed.
Yeah,
Kuechly is literally the only guy in my mind that I would put him on an island against a tight end and I'd feel pretty good about it.
I mean, even if you think about it, another linebacker that's known for his excellent coverage, Sean Lee, you saw what happened when he got manned up with Richard Rodgers in that playoff game. So you're right. In this day and age, with the athleticism of tight ends, you know, back in the 90s, you could put a linebacker in a tight end. You can get away with it. It's really hard now when you got these 6'6", 240-pound guys running 4.5s to ask a tight end to cover them. That's why you need Cam Chancellors and guys like that and Earl Thomases and guys like that that can cover tight ends from the safety position.
Correct. The safety position, I think, is a position to maybe look at now. You know, Darian Thompson hasn't been on the field much, so the evaluation period is still going out there. He was more considered a ball hawk in college, you know, a guy that maybe could be more of a center fielder. Can they envision developing him into a coverage guy, Jack? I mean, maybe that's something that they'll look into, or perhaps look at another safety in free agency or in the draft to gain some versatility. But, you know, you'd be very hard-pressed, even on the market in the draft, to bring in a line back, and that's going to be a shutdown tight end coverage guy, because there are very few in the league right now.
Yeah. Okay, I'm kind of looking maybe more towards, wouldn't be a bad idea if one of those two tight ends is available at 23, that they actually jump on it this time and find somebody that can, you know, cause some damage to our NFC opponents, not them just turning around and giving it back to us.
Yeah, you know what? And I think there's a good chance one of those two guys will be there at 23. It's rare that I think two tight ends go in the top 20, though this tight end crop is very strong. And I think both players are very good. I'm going to watch a lot of O.J. Howard this afternoon. I'll watch 2 or 3 games of him. I watched 3 games of Njoku from Miami yesterday. And watching Njoku, here's the few things that I saw from him that I really liked. One, The guy, in terms of run after the catch, is as good as any tight end I've seen coming out of college. He breaks tackles. He turns 4-yard gains into 18-yard games. He's great with the stiff arm. He gets linebackers and safeties and corners off of him like it's nobody's business. His run after the catch is phenomenal. Now, they didn't ask him to block a lot, but he did play in line tight end. Miami did run some spread, but they also ran some I formation, some power run stuff, and he was okay. You know, he wasn't getting killed. He's willing to get in there. He mixes it up. He's a willing blocker. He's a big body kid. He's 250 pounds at 6'3". So he has the mass and, I think, the physicality to do it. He was willing. He wasn't one of these guys that was just Olay and letting guys run around him. So here's the thing with college tight ends, and I think O.J. Howard is an exception given how Nick Saban used him at Miami. You're going to have to develop pretty much any tight end you get from college as a blocker. They do not ask athletic pass-catching tight ends to block in college, period. They just don't do it. Now, O.J. Howard's an exception. I think Njoku's a guy that you can teach to block, and look, is he ever going to be Howard Cross? No, probably not. But I think he'll be a good enough blocker to combine with his athleticism where he can be an effective player for you on first, second, and third down and not have to come off the field. That's my opinion from what I saw.
I mean, the other thing to take into consideration, it's relevant to this topic, you know, I'm always into trends. The Giants have not taken many tight ends in the first two rounds, based on history.
That's correct.
Yeah, we're talking about Vasante Shanko is the last guy that went that early.
And Shockey the
Giants
year before.
And Shockey before that. Mm-hmm. But that's far removed the last time I checked. And, you know, I know I keep bringing this up. It's like every year we talk about taking a linebacker in the first round, right? How many times do I bring up Carl Banks was the last linebacker the Giants took in the first round?
That's true.
I think you have to look at the fact that trend-wise, the Giants have not invested high draft picks in that position. The trend has been more on drafted players, unknown free agents who have been backups who now have an opportunity to branch out and become starters. That's been the trend mostly for the Giants. And that's why I would be leery of perhaps that trend changing. Now, every draft year is different. It could happen. It's just if you go based on the numbers in the last few years, I wouldn't say that maybe that would be the favorite for the position that the Giants would take in the first round.
Well, yeah, well, that's what I'm afraid of. But anyway.
Well, I'm not trying to put fear in your eyes. It's just, I mean, like I said, you know, that
thanks
may,
for the call, Jack.
May
we
have
appreciate
to do
it.
With, and appreciate the phone call, Jack. Yeah. It just may have to do with, you got it, them putting more value in other positions who they think can come in and make a better transition in year one in the league.
Yeah, I'm just evaluating the player. I have no idea if the Giants are picking him. Because, as you said, based on history, you'd say, probably not. But like you said, all drafts are different. And, you know, the Giants, they're going to pick the next best player on the board. That's how they got the Eli Apple last year, and that's how they'll get to whoever they get to when they pick at 23 this year. They're going to pick the best player that's there, period.
And it could very well, based on what you just said, it could be a position where on paper, when you evaluate the roster, you say, you know what? I thought they had enough depth at that position. But based on value, like you said, they feel if we bring this guy in, he could still find a way to get on the field and make an impact.
I mean, remember when they drafted JPP?
He's probably one of the best examples.
Why do you need him? You got OC, you got Kiwanuka, you got Tuck. Why are you drafting the fourth pass rusher, and then the next year he had 17 and a half sacks?
Well, that's a good point, but also who got hurt JPP's rookie year? Kiwanuka got hurt. So you turned out that you actually needed JPP on the roster because you can't predict injuries.
And Eli Apple and Huchola, who I went to next, complained for a year how the Giants picked a backup cornerback with their first-round pick. And then what did he do? He goes in there, and he ends up having a really good year. And he's a virtual starter because, as we mentioned over the course of the year, you know, the Giants are a nickel a ton because that's what NFL teams do now because you have a lot of three wide receiver sets and things of that nature. So you go through these things, and you realize with injuries and the way the NFL works, more often than not, you're going to need multiple people at a position except for certain positions like quarterback and the offensive line. We usually don't rotate people in and out.
I got a bad feeling about
this. He complains about everything,
Hallelujah.
Though, in fairness.
Losing his mind.
Oh, so he's crazy.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
And here we go.
Hello, Charlie in Portland, Maine. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. How are you, buddy?
Hey, John, I'm good. Hey, Lance, how y'all doing?
Doing all right, Charlie. Hey. Could be better, but...
Hey, I got a few things here. First of all, the only reason we got Apple because Jerry was asleep at the wheel when they went ahead of him and picked the two guys he wanted. So, and the other thing is the only reason he started is because he couldn't play the slot. and DRC was willing to go into the slot position, which he should have been in the first place. So I don't think it was a great pick for a number one pick. Is he going to end up being a good player? Yes, he will. Hopefully he'll be more than that.
Hold on a second. Go ahead, Lance. You go first.
Well, I was going to – I don't know where to begin. Where do I begin? I got like 75 things I want to throw. Number one, Charlie.
I'm gathering my thoughts here.
Any corner, and Leon Hall's the first one to admit this, will tell you that the hardest position at the cornerback spot to play in the NFL, even for veterans, is the slot position. It's very rare. And I'm not even going to question this because you're going to wind up giving me wacky suggestions on Twitter. This is what I go. But go find me a number of rookies who came in year one and have thrived playing the slot corner position.
Hargrave did.
Hargrave had his fair share of ups and downs, though, too.
Apple had a better year than Hargrave as a cover guy, Charlie.
That wouldn't be the first guy that I would use as an example. But I'm not surprised. It's Charlie, anyway.
He played slot, though.
So who cares if he played slot? What's the difference?
The point is, I'm not talking about a guy that plays it. I'm talking about also having a success rate at that position. That's what I'm talking about, Charlie.
He was, in fact, Pro Football Focus, I think, actually put him in there. Rookie class of best cornerbacks, and Apple wasn't there. So, Charlie, do you really think
Eli Apple had a bad rookie year?
No, I'm not saying he had a bad rookie year.
Then what's the problem?
He was not a first-round pick, period. So here's another thing. You know, Jerry had him on the board all along. He was going to grab him number one. No, he wasn't.
No, I said no. I said he was the next best player on their board. That's what I said.
No, Tunsil was the next best player, but they let him go by.
Well, wait a minute. Charlie, did you see the board, though? This is what I find comical. Did you see the board, Charlie? Can you send me a faxed version of the board?
Is bad, but let me go on to something else. The other thing I want to talk about is tight end.
Uh-huh.
And you were saying, you know, talking about tight end, you were talking about the trend. You know, we don't pick tight ends. Well, you know, look at our tight ends for the last 4 or 5 years. Don't you think this trend has to change? I mean, we can't keep having undrafted free agent tight ends. They don't work.
No, they're not that good.
They can't block. They can't catch.
Charlie, I mean, I've been an advocate for picking a tight end higher in the draft for 3 years. People were screaming at me about Ebron 2 years ago, so don't yell at me.
Lance is saying this is a trend, so don't be surprised.
Because I'm pointing out the fact that they look at it and change the trend.
But he's pointing out a historical fact, Charlie. He's not giving his opinion.
I'm giving you – laying out every year what has transpired. The point is not that you should stay stagnant and not try to look to change the trends. The point is, you know, every caller calls up and starts talking about these prominent tight ends, and I'm just saying, when was the last time the Giants took a tight end in the first or the second round? That's all I'm pointing out based on history and facts. And here's the other thing to notice. You know, if you also look at the NFL as a whole, tight ends and where they've gone and who's made an impact, you know, there have been some undrafted guys, and there have been some guys that have been taken early that have had mixed results. I mean, Eric Ebron is the one guy that I keep throwing out. The Lions took him fairly early, and if you go back in that draft, you say Detroit probably could have taken somebody else that would have a far greater impact.
And Ebron has underachieved, I think it's fair to say.
So, I mean, you could say, hey, Ebron was a great prospect coming out of college. Wonderful.
And he's had injury issues too, Ebron.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it doesn't always work out, even if you take a guy high in the first round, and you say, you know what, on paper he's going to be great. On paper is one thing, Charlie. How it pans out on the football field is completely different.
But this draft is loaded with really good tight ends.
Which tells you maybe you can still get one even if you don't take it in the first round.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, the other thing I want to talk to you about, JPP's in New York. Is he in the building? Have you seen him? You said he's coming there to get a bunch of cash. So is he in the building?
What the hell are you talking about, Charlie? I don't know what you're talking about. Was there something on Instagram or something?
He tweeted out he was coming to New York to get a bundle of money. And also who tweeted out was Jackrabbit saying, we're keeping the gang together. So that's what was tweeted out yesterday. And so he's supposed to be in New York on his way or there today, hopefully signing a contract with JR. And the thing is, if we wait and try to sign him after free agency, no way, he's gone. If JR offers him a good deal, he's not going to get as much if he goes to Jacksonville. Jacksonville's going to give him more money. But if we offer him something that doesn't disrespect him, like $15 million a year, 3 years, maybe four, but guarantee the money. Contracts all about guaranteed
money. I agree with you.
Money.
I think that's a very fair point.
So
I agree with you.
You've got to guarantee the money. And if you do that, he will stay in New York because he loves his defense. He wants to win another championship here. And he's not going to win a championship in Jacksonville with a quarterback they have right now. So if JR steps up to the plate and offers him some money, which supposedly he's in the building today, which you guys are like the CIA. You wouldn't tell me if he was there or not. But it, hopefully we'll hear later this afternoon that he is signed. So that's what I'm hoping.
I think you should be more CIA than we are. I mean, you're the one. Wait a minute.
I don't even see this tweet, by the way.
Well, that's
I don't
the
know
other
what he's
thing.
Talking
but
about.
You know what? A lot of things that he says goes in one ear and out the other.
Maybe Instagram or something.
But this is what I love about Charlie. Charlie's pointing out a tweet that
doesn't exist.
Jack Rabbit
no,
sent
it
out.
No, it doesn't exist. I saw it yesterday.
No, he's sending out a tweet that Jack Rabbit sent out, and that tweet I did see. So that I know
I
exists.
I saw that one too.
Okay, but notice how Charlie
I'll
is connecting the dots. You know, Charlie, you're in the wrong profession. You know, you need to get into the psychological profession where you take A and you connect it to B and then the outcome becomes C. Because I love it how you're at the point where you don't know what to do with yourself other than bang your head against the wall, that you now have to take
the
random
trees.
Tweets.
The bang
trees.
Against the tree.
I will send you
that's
that
better.
Tweet.
Yes.
It
yes.
Out.
I'm sorry. I should have painted
guys...
the scene of what's going on in Maine a little bit better than the wall. You're the trees and knocking down the leaves, if any are left, and trying to determine what Jenkins
just one
meant
more
in his
thing.
Tweet.
Just yes. one more thing. And I just want to say we have to sign JPP because we need three pass rushes, and we don't have it. And if you think a core and double O is going to fill the bill, we need another guy. That's why we got to draft another guy in the draft who's a good pass rusher. You know, and we need to get a specialist, not a guy that has to – you know, be incredible on the run and be incredible on pass rushing. We need a guy that's just a pass
rusher. Well, but here's the thing, Charlie.
Come in on third down and rush the pass.
But, Charlie, see,
we got to run, Charlie. Thanks, buddy.
I appreciate the phone call.
Okay,
you know, this is where I disagree with Charlie on that point, where he talks about specialists. Because, see, JPP doesn't have to come off the field, John. JPP's not a liability. You know if you keep him in and it's a pass rushing down, he's going to protect you because he can stop the run. If you start talking specialists, now you have to pick and choose when you put guys on the field, and you have to determine, can I keep him on the field or is he a liability in stopping the run? JPP, you never had to ask yourself that question.
And by the way, can't you consider, and I know he didn't do it a ton and didn't have a ton of sack numbers, but in some ways, isn't Devon Kennard kind of that guy?
Where you could keep him on the field to stop the run
no,
and get into the pass.
To me, he's the
specialist. Okay,
he's the guy. He's the pass rush specialist. Now he can play that linebacker position on first and second down as a run stopper, but on third down, he's a pass rush specialist because he's not going to be a defensive lineman on first or second down. He's just not going to do it. So again, you can argue the effectiveness of him in that position. Sure, I'm not telling you that he's OCU Manure on third down, but that's a guy that can play that type of role as a third down pass rusher. That's all I'm saying.
Well, and that's why, and nobody's disagreeing with that. I mean, we agree that JPP has tremendous amount of value, but when you start throwing out the term, we're going to have a specialist to stop the run, a specialist to get to the quarterback, now if you're the defensive coordinator, how do you now turn to a guy based on what the offense is showcasing? That becomes more of a challenge. There's a reason why Olivier Vernon and JPP played more snaps than any other defensive line.
They're good at everything.
There you go. It's as simple as that. That's why they stayed on the field. They did not have to play the guessing game.
Yep.
Do we keep them on the field? Do we take them off the field? They knew they're good in both facets of the defense.
All right, here we go. I think Salmon here has a link. It's not on his Twitter account anyway. Okay, it was JPP Snapchat, and he put a little
Charlie's
graphic
on Charlie's got to keep up on which
on
social
there.
Media outlet.
So here it was. It was on JPP Snapchat, apparently. He put a graphic up there prior to boarding a plane to New York and New Jersey, getting to the money and $4 sign bags. I don't know what that means.
No.
I mean, you
once
can
again.
Figure it out, but
yes.
I don't know what that means.
I mean, you could read into a lot of these images and so forth. Players do that for a lot of things, and they do it also to spice up the dialogue as well.
Well, getting back to, you know, it's a separate issue, but similar. Like last week when Isaiah Thomas – from the Celtics just put, like, the two big eyeballs on Twitter, and then everybody's freaking out about who the Celtics are traded for.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying. Players,
yeah,
they
exactly,
know
right.
they can feed the beast, as I like to
and
say.
And I'm trying to remember, what last Sick. Summer, too, players kept sending emojis back and
yeah,
forth, too.
Yeah, remember it was with DeAndre Jordan.
That's
the Clippers
what it
and
was.
The Mavs.
That's right.
Remember everybody
yeah.
was doing read between the
that was
images
2 years ago.
Or whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, come on. And leave it to Charlie to bring this up as a topic of discussion. Now, the more fascinating question is Charlie on Snapchat? Is that what that means? Or
Boy.
Is Charlie just reading these random articles that people send him?
Well, we know he's on Twitter. And
yeah.
he said apparently Bill Norris, one of our listeners and tweeters, said it was also reposted on his Facebook page at some point, too. So
okay, so
I
JPP put it on Snapchat and he put it on Facebook.
I don't
But we don't know
sure.
if it was put on Twitter. Okay, for those of you counting at home and keeping tally of the social media avenues and so forth.
All right. We got three calls left.
I'm
we got about
we
10 minutes.
That mystery because I was a little worked up on that.
Let's get to it. Travis in Queens. He's up next. Hi, Travis.
Hey, guys. How you guys going?
We're doing great. Travis, how are you?
Good, good, good. I was listening to you guys, and you guys mentioned, you know, about coming up, you know, this year for the free agency pool will be tough for the Giants. It's stressful. But I don't think it's stressful. Everybody's calling, and you guys are, to me, not talking about the thing at need, which is this year, like I called yesterday, I said, JPP, you could let them walk. This year, we need to focus on our offensive line. That's where we struggled at offensively.
Well, Travis, hold on. Are you telling me we haven't talked about the offensive line this offseason?
No, you guys talked about
it. Oh, okay.
It should be stressed more than anything. I mean, we don't – first of all, JPP is coming off a surgery that we don't know – what production we're going to get from him. So investing money, a four-year deal in him, you know, you can kill two birds with one stone in the draft by getting a pass rusher / outside linebacker. I mean, so we keep trying to, like get by with signing a decent free agent linebacker that's cheap. I mean, after a while, it gets exposed. And this year, in certain key situations, in a lot of games we had, that was getting exposed. And on top of that, you need to also focus on depth at cornerback. When DRC went down, and I called you guys, and you guys said, once DRC went down, the Giants' game plan was shot. So that goes to tell you that Trevin Wade, Sensabaugh, none of these guys could fill that void and fill those shoes. We need more depth at cornerback. We need depth at free safety, and we need depth at linebacker.
All right, well, Travis, real quick. One, I think if you're adding depth at cornerback, you would add it in the draft. You already have a lot of money invested in DRC and Janoris Jenkins, and you used a first-round pick in Eli Apple. So whoever your fourth cornerback is going to be, you're not going to go out in free agency and pay that guy a lot of money. That's number one. Number two.
Yeah, but DRC, too, is injury-prone, too.
Okay, but how many top corners do you want to have on the roster?
You can only spend so much on one position.
I mean, but DRC and also so Eli Apple too hasn't been there at times too. He missed what, two games, three games?
Well, Travis, that's fine. I'm going to ask.
That's not a trend necessarily.
Year.
Answer my question, Travis. What do you want to do then for your fourth corner? Do you want to draft somebody on day one or day two? Do you want to sign somebody to a free agent contract? What do you want to do for the fourth corner?
I mean, for the fourth corner, I think you would sign. I hope the Giants would sign somebody. I won't invest a lot of money at cornerback.
Okay, so we're on the same page, and that's fine. And then at safety, you have Darian Thompson coming back. You have Andrew Adams on the roster, who started a lot for you last year. You have Leon Hall that played there a little bit. He's a free agent. I don't think free safety depth is necessarily on the top of my list for needs, to be honest with you. It's not.
But see, like Paul mentioned yesterday, and he made a good point about the trenches and competition. I don't know if the Giants can do it, but let's say they could bring in Reef and Whitmore. Is that his name?
Whitworth. Andre Whitworth.
Whitworth. If you could bring them two in, and you know what I mean, stir up competition with Flowers and Bobby Hart. That would be a good thing for the Giants.
Sure.
Yeah, but whether or not that's reasonably from a financial standpoint is a whole other story.
Or even
though.
Possible based on right, what right, those players
yeah,
want to do.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it'd be great to bring in those two guys for competition. I don't disagree with you. And I was here when Paul made that point. And you could say that about any position. But you have to also think about financially, is that reasonable
and feasible?
Okay, so if it's not reasonable, then I guess, you know, it's just wishing. But I'm saying our focus should be, and free agency, our focus should be the things that plagued us, which was linebacker and offensive line and another spot at the corner. Because honestly, everybody's spreading the field. So everybody's trying to get to the weakest position. So, like, when Trevin Wade and all these guys is guarding and Steve and Stagg is sending an all-out blitz and it's man for man, we've seen where they guys went to in the spot and also where our defensive line, including JPP, wasn't getting home. So those guys was getting exposed. So come draft now, that's when you go for. If last year, Jerry Reese, he wanted to get Floyd from Chicago. That was his pick he was going to get. I think there's a lot of them in this year's draft, and you go after one at 23.
All right,
and
that's fine.
I mean, if they want to add depth at corner, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Or on the defense line, the rush of the passer, Travis. I don't think we're really on different pages here. We got to run. I have two more calls I got to get in. Thanks for the call, bud. But look, you can never have enough pass rushers. You can never have enough cornerbacks. I don't think anybody would argue that. And look, you want to – no one's arguing that the top thing the Giants need to improve this offseason is the offensive line. No one's sitting here arguing with you on that.
And to bring in competition to help improve what you currently have, nobody would necessarily disagree with that. But – there's a difference between being a wishful thinker and being a reasonable thinker. And when you start throwing out Riley Reiff and Andre Whitworth.
And paying for a fourth corner.
And also, let's not forget the depth on the free agent market at that position and other teams other than the Giants that also need assistance at the tackle position. You know, we sometimes talk about as if the Giants are the only team out there that are interested in perhaps improving the tackle position.
That have free agent money.
I could list a number of other teams that need help at the tackle position that are in a far worse position than the Giants. And they're going to be willing to splash the big money. You have to take these things into consideration before you say, well, you know, why didn't the Giants bring this guy in and so forth?
It's not just, I want that guy, we got him.
Yeah.
This isn't a draft where you say, I pick Riley Reiff, you have to come here. It doesn't work that way. You're competing with other teams that also, in some cases, have more resources than you do. So, it's just the way it goes. Let's go to Nick in New York, and then Ryan in Long Island will be last. Nick, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, man?
What's up, bud?
Hey, I know a bunch of people brought up some points about Hankins and free agency. Honestly, I think that it'd be pretty greedy to say we could sign back JPP and Hankins. And if I would had to let one of them go in free agency, it'd most likely be Hankins. Because JPP is obviously a two-way pass rusher and run stuffer, and I honestly think that we could draft someone within the first three rounds that could easily replace Hankins. And even though I like him to death, I'm a huge Giants fan, I don't think that we really need someone opposite of Harrison who can actually rush the quarterback.
Because I think that's fair.
We brought him as a run stuffer, so to have someone next to him who that's not even really the position that he would be playing. He'd be playing more of Harrison's position. I feel like that's where he definitely excels better. But since his first season, he hasn't really gotten to the quarterback, and that really showed up when JPP and Vernon played against Green Bay, and you have these tackles that can stop our defensive ends, you need someone to be able to push the middle.
That's fair.
And we had no one there.
Yeah, Nick, I don't think anybody
really showed up in that Green Bay game both times, even when we had JPP the first time. Where was the pass rush up the middle, you know?
Yeah, Nick, I don't think anybody would argue that you want to see more pass rush out of the Giants' defensive tackles next year. I agree with that. Unfortunately, this is a very shallow draft when it comes to three techniques. And the free agent market is not great. Good pass rushing defensive tackles are rare, and teams rarely let them walk away. So the question is, who would you get to replace him to fill that role? And that's when things get a little bit tricky.
Yeah, Aaron Donald is not walking through the door. I will tell you that.
Right.
Or Fletcher Cox, for that matter, or the McCoy from Tampa,
Gerald McCoy. Yeah. Those are rare guys who are two-way defensive linemen. And here's the other thing: when Linval Joseph, left, remember Hankins was already being groomed. If you want to part ways with Hankins and you don't know who the answer is currently on the roster, it's a much riskier situation that you're setting yourself up for.
Nick, we got to run. We got no time, all right?
Okay. Can I just say one thing?
Yeah, really quick.
Yeah, if I had the Giants sign a tight end, I would not have them sign some. I would not have them draft someone that's really high, and I would actually look into Jack Doyle, who's from the Colts, that I haven't heard anyone really talk about, who is ranked around 15th on tight ends this year, had the least amount of drops out of all the tight ends this year, and was great run blocking, played special teams, and played H-back. And he's like Mr. Reliable over there, and everyone loves him, and I would love to see the Giants sign him.
I think if you're looking, and thanks a lot for the call, we appreciate it. I think if you're looking at a good mid-range safety type of tight end signing, I think Jack Doyle will be fine.
Yeah, Doyle to me is like a Martellus Bennett when he signed with the Giants. He was backing up Jason Witten, Doyle back up to Dwayne Allen. They just gave Dwayne Allen a contract. He fits that mold that the Giants have targeted in the past. I think that's a very good recommendation if you're looking for somebody that wants to break out of his shell and could step into a starting role and thrive and is a two-way tight end. That's in line with the Giants' philosophy much more so than using the 23rd overall pick on a tight end who's young and unproven.
Now, I also don't think that Jack Doyle's going to come in here and be Jimmy Graham either.
No,
I don't think he has the physical upside of a Martellus Bennett either, but you're right. He's a guy
the type of role
that's been given a limited opportunity and did show something when he was given a chance to play after the Dwayne Allen injury this year. And that, Lance, I'll absolutely agree with you. 201-939-4513. Final call, Ryan in Long Island. He's up next. Hi, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing, guys? John and Lance, how you guys doing?
We're doing great,
Ryan.
Bud.
How's things with you?
So, listening to you guys earlier in the show, I believe that was John saying that you're going to go by the track record of Jerry Reese and his drafting scheme. And I totally agree about the tight end in the first round. Normally, you know, how we drafted JPP in the first round, and everyone was like, why? Well, because it makes sense. You get pressure on the quarterback. Now, in terms of JPP and Jonathan Hankins, you really can't go wrong with either. However, I do think you're going to get better production from Hankins the length of the contract due to the age difference, the four-year age difference. That's kind of a big swing in football years. So I think if you sign Hankins, you end up getting better production through the lifetime of the contract. And as far as offensive tackles, I haven't heard anyone really talk about Matt Cali from Minnesota. What's the deal with him?
You talk about Matt Khalil, I think, is who you're referring to.
Khalil, thank you, yeah. Yes.
Well, he's a guy that suffered an injury this season and missed the majority of the year, so you have to take that into consideration. Much more proven commodity from a veteran perspective, but health-wise, I think, is a question mark. I mean, I've heard mixed reports about Minnesota trying to keep him, maybe moving on. I mean, the Vikings have major offensive line question marks all across the board, mainly due to injuries. But, you know, he is a guy that has proven he could be effective, but I think the health factor is something I'd want to look at very carefully before I'd invest in somebody like that.
Right, but I mean, when you're talking about the Giants' offensive tackle woes, I mean, could you take a flyer on them with Eric Flowers and John Jerry and all the guys they got rotating through there now, Bobby Hart? I mean, taking a flyer on him wouldn't be such a bad deal, especially if they don't land a Rick Wagner, or maybe if Russell Okung from Denver doesn't get his option picked up. You know, you don't land somebody like that. Also, I just wanted to touch on the tight end thing, because you can obviously drop an offensive lineman in the first round if the Wisconsin tackle falls to 23, which is highly unlikely. Obviously, I'm sure the Giants would jump on that. A name, I know he got injured the last game of the year, but I haven't heard anyone talk about Jake Butt. If you can land him in the third round, someone like that, a fifth-year senior, played in a pro-style offense, like you were talking about, a little bit with the Miami tight end, you end up getting a pro-style, Jason Witten-esque type of tight end with Jake Butt. What do you think about that?
No, I think Jake Butt's going to be a good player. I think, like you said, he's kind of like the exception, like O.J. Howard. He can actually do both block and catch. I think that's somebody, if you can get him, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. If you can get him in the middle rounds, even if it means having a bit of a redshirt year at the pro level, which is what he might have to have because he tore his ACL in January. You know, who knows when he's going to be back from that. You never know from player to player. I think that's somebody you could consider. I got a couple tweets here, Lance, really quick. Steve Morelli, if there's a stud guard on the board at 23, is it still too early to take that position? To me, tackle isn't our only issue. I'd be surprised if a straight-up guard went at 23.
It's very rare that that happens. I mean, you think about a Zach Martin with the Dallas Cowboys, but outside of that, once again, rare. I think if you're going to draft somebody in the first round, he probably would have to show the versatility that could be tackle slash guard as opposed to solely a guard.
Let's see. Frank Waiters, my gene draft list. Howard or Cunningham, one. Solomon Thomas, Dante Freeman. Second round, Jared Evans, Damian, and then Pat Mahomes, the quarterback in round three. Then a lot of misspelled stuff I can't understand.
bring in Charlie to translate.
Yeah,
I think I might.
Apparently, Glazer just put out there that the Broncos are not picking up Okung's option, which is not a surprise given I think it was $17 million guaranteed or something like that.
He also had a
like
rough
that.
Season, too, let's not forget.
And my response to him was there's a reason they didn't pick up that $17
yes,
million option.
Exactly. And by the way, see, that was a good structured deal. And that goes back to the guaranteed money. They gave him
good for the Broncos.
Well, I meant that for the Broncos.
Not so good for Russell Okung.
No, but they protected themselves because if memory serves me correct, John, they gave him, I think, like a 4 or 5 year deal, but the first year was the only guaranteed year. So it was like a trial contract. If it works out, we'll have him still on the books. If not, then we could get out of it.
And then Chris Grathol commenting on, I think it was Travis who wanted to let go of JPP and go after offensive linemen. Two of them. I'm sorry, but this guy who wants to cut JPP to spend big money on mediocre offensive linemen eats me to no end. This guy is breaking up a highly successful defense for some backside of 30-year-old offensive lineman, comma, brilliant.
Well, on the
I thought
point,
they were funny. That's the reason.
No, and I agree. On the point that I think it was Chris whose tweet you just read,
yeah.
And Okung is a good one that you brought up. Because, see, Russell Okung is an example, and Giants fans were calling for him last season, too, I remember. Mm-hmm. Okung, established name. Came from Seattle, where they've been known for having good line play, good running game.
In the past, not recently.
Well, not recently, but with Marshawn Correct. Lynch and their lines, mm-hmm. that was the identity of the team. Okay,
sure.
So the Denver goes out, takes a chance on Okung. Okay, fine. But he doesn't necessarily deliver. So the example is you can throw out all the household names you want. Bringing in a name for the sake of a name is not necessarily guaranteeing production on the field. That's the point. And that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do anything. That's not my point here. But my point is you can't just look at the free agent wire and find the first name that comes to mind and say all of a sudden the Giants should automatically bring the guy in because he's a name that I've heard of and perhaps he helped my running back on my fantasy team flourish. You can't think like that. And Okung, I think, is the perfect example of a guy who was an established name, but it didn't necessarily pan out for the Denver Broncos.
Good stuff, Lance.
You got it.
Thanks on Twitter. Thanks to the callers. We'll be back. Same duo tomorrow right here on Giants.com. Jeff Fiegels is on vacation. He'll be back next Tuesday with Lance. Lance will be with Paul Dottino on Monday, and then it'll be me and Dottino from the Combine Wednesday through Friday. And ha, I actually got the host right for once. For Lance Netto.
Yeah, I'm stunned.
I'm John Schmelk. Thanks for joining
High
us.
Note.
We'll see you next time on Giants.com. Everybody have a great day.